get started.
I feel lost without Al Wall here now.
Well, I feel a little bit weird, actually.
Especially now that the room is set up like
that. I know.
Exactly.
This is the formal informal.
It is. We've done it one other time that I can recall, and the last time we did it was with XL. So, yeah, I remember it very well. Tony was struggling to remember it too in time. But, yeah, I remember it well. Anyway. Yeah. What's the date today? The 23rd, right? All right. Yeah, it sure is. All right, well, we'll go ahead and get started. It is about 10 minutes, I guess, after 9 a.m. on September 23rd, 2010. This is the North Dakota Public Service Commission holding an informal hearing on case numbers PU09676 and PU09678. That is the Advanced Determination of Prudence in the CapEx 2020 Group 1 application for Otter Tail Power Company and Northern States Power Company. And this is Kevin Kramer along with Tony Clark and Brian Kalk. All three commissioners are in attendance, and I thought I'd just, besides welcoming everybody and thanking you for being here and braving this wonderful fall weather, just maybe give at least my best recollection of the history that brings us to this point. I'm glad we're here. As you all know, no doubt know, we did have a formal hearing on a settlement agreement between advocates and the companies. Following that formal hearing, we did have a number of work sessions. We also lost the advocate attorney in the case, the advisor attorney, I'm sorry, our advisor. Yeah, it'd been easy if we had just lost the advocate attorney, but we lost the three of us who are in the most need of professional help. We're without our attorney through a couple of work sessions. So, at the same time, we had some pretty sincere and serious questions about some of the language in the terms of the settlement, and you're all familiar with that, I think, as parties. Most especially the what was come to be known as paragraph one in the terms, but a few other things as well. In the meantime, we've now gotten another attorney, and in a moment, what I'll do is we'll take appearances, even though it isn't informal, and just so that everybody understands, while this is set up as a formal in terms of the room arrangement, it is in fact an informal, and so the dialogue back and forth will be just that. It will be a little more informal, while at the same time, given that it is a contested case, we'll try to maintain as much order as we can, not only for the efficiency of the meeting, but also one of the things that we don't have in this particular hearing is, of course, a court reporter. And we did have that last time, and it was very helpful. It's been helpful to me as I've gone back and read the transcript a few times. But even with regard to a clean record for the informal, having, frankly, these microphones and the better microphones all being utilized, it helps in a clean record as well as for anybody that might be listening online. So with that, I guess I would turn it over to my colleagues for their opening comments as well, and then we can, I think, go around to them and take appearances for the record as well. So start with the portfolio holder, Commissioner Clark.
Just good morning and welcome. The only thing that I would add to Kevin's comments interest of creating a good record, if you could announce your name prior to speaking, I mean, it'll be helpful as we go back
good point.
And review the sound recording. So thanks.
All right. Commissioner Kalk?
Just thanks for coming, and let's get to it.
All right, with that, let's go around the room and just simply take appearances so that the record is clear on that. And why don't we start, Alana, with you, because you're to the right, and we'll go, how about clockwise?
Alana Jeffcoat-Sacco, attorney for advocacy staff.
Mike Krikova and Zev Simpser from Briggs & Morgan on behalf of applicants.
Okay. And why don't you go ahead and state your name, too, just so that we know that you're here, whether you're going to.
Zev Simpser, Briggs & Morgan on behalf of applicants.
Thanks, Zev. Back to Jerry.
Jerry Land with Commission Advocacy Staff.
Mitch Armstrong, Special Assistant Attorney General on behalf of the Commission, along with Patrick Fawn.
Very good. Others in the room are with the companies, and they're just observing. If you participate, which you certainly are welcome to, then we can maybe have you
I would
state
like to
your
ask
name
a question.
Sure.
It is an informal, so would your viewpoint be that if we have a question there, we should give it to you guys, and then you guys should confer and give us back the answer? we can have a good back and forth discussion.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Kalk, we're happy to have however you want it. We're looking for a dialogue.
Yeah,
here.
We're happy to have direct with our with the companies as well, if you guys are all willing to do that.
Absolutely.
But you might as well all sit up at the table if you want to do that as well. So why don't you do that? You don't have to be uncomfortable or crowded either if you don't need to be. But I think that's helpful.
This isn't informal.
It is.
Our intention is to
be
as much of a dialogue as you folks want to answer your questions and...
All right.
And certainly direct questions to the folks who are here are fine with us.
That's great. Okay. Well, let's continue then with roll call.
Good morning. Tim Rogelson from Otter Tail Power.
Jim Alders with XL Energy.
Thanks, Jim. All right. Then what I think... obviously, the purpose, and I believe it was do we have somebody on the phone?
MISO was supposed to call.
Oh, sure. We have an intervener in this case, don't we? MISO is an intervener. Are they on the phone?
Mr. Chairman, this is Keith Bell from Midwest ISO, the intervener.
Great. Thank you. Thanks. Good catch, you guys. We don't want to leave you out. And the phone is probably live, so if there's anything that you need to break in on, Keith, feel free to do that. Every once in a while, I'll try to remember as well to dial you up, if you will. Now, while this isn't informal, the informal, as I recall, was requested by the companies, and we appreciate that after you're no doubt sensing some of our maybe frustration and confusion and, of course, the bringing on of Mitch as our attorney. And so it is a hearing, and Alana has been reminding us pretty regularly, while it's informal, it still is a hearing. The rules of evidence still apply, and we need to have good, clean record so we can build that for our decision. Having said that, I suspect that the companies having requested the hearing probably have something that they'd like to perhaps present starting out. Is that fair, Mr. Kirkova? Is that your intention? Would that be an okay way to proceed?
Absolutely,
right.
Mr. Chair. Thank you very much.
Where's yours?
First of all, and Alana, I'm not sure how you want to handle this, but we've had some discussions with Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco about putting on the record or stating a stipulation that we understand that while this is an informal hearing, we are going to be presenting some new documents. We have a new settlement we're going to talk about in a minute. You folks are going to obviously have some questions, and rather than deal with any confusion about what the facts are, upon which you can rely in making your decision, we hereby stipulate that anything said here today is fair game for you to consider, and to the extent that we have a desire for any sort of so-called cross-examination or follow-up, we'll make the commitment that we need to sort of raise our hand and say, hey, we want to follow up on something there. Sure. And if we don't, then our silence will be deemed as having waived the right to come back later and challenge something on procedural grounds.
Sure. All right.
Recognizing, of course, that if on the merits of things we have difficulties, we may or may not. And so did I get that close enough?
Yes, I just want to state the statute number, Century Code 2832-25. And so both parties are, and I believe the intervener as well, are basically waiving any procedural irregularities in order to allow that information in under that statute.
All right. Keith, you agree with that?
Yeah, I have no objections. The only caveat I would say, in addition to what Mr. Kirkova mentioned, I guess I will speak up rather than raise my hand.
There you go. We appreciate that. Mitch, everything's good with that?
Yes.
All right, thanks. All right.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Commissioners. Thank you very, very much for giving us an opportunity to come here and talk to you today. We really recognize that you folks have worked a long time on these dockets, and you've worked very hard. We recognize that this has created some complexities and that we have created some confusion as we have proceeded with this, and I apologize to the extent that we created that confusion, and I think unfortunately when you leave to lawyers to draft things like settlement agreements, sometimes we're prone to making them sound like legal documents, and
We heard loud and clear from you folks that maybe a more straightforward approach would have on the front end might have been a little bit better, and we hope we're getting there.
Mm-hmm.
We have listened carefully to all of your work sessions. We've been the proverbial fly on the wall, watching and listening and trying to digest what we heard you saying, the concerns that you folks were raising. And we have, I think, done our best to try to address those. We went back to your advocacy staff and worked very cooperatively with them to try to rework the settlement, particularly paragraph one, to try to make it a little bit more straightforward, a little less full of legalese, and hopefully a little less confusing. I think the fundamental remains largely the same as far as our hope for when the ADP would kick in, but hopefully we've done a better job of laying that out in a way that is more straightforward and will, to your point, Mr. Chair, lead us to a clear record so that downstream there won't be any confusion. There is one material change that we did offer in the revised settlement, which, again, as we were hearing your discussions in your work sessions, we understood there to be some concern and perhaps some confusion about our view that signing the ownership agreement, creating this investment commitment, really was something that was sticking in people's difficult to get your arms around. Mm-hmm. We have included in the new settlement agreement the commitment that, from our view, the ADP would kick in on the commencement of actual physical construction of the facilities or 30 days following signing the ownership agreement. And by the way, I want to, for clarity's purposes, I want to we're going to try very hard today to refer to it in always as an ownership agreement.
Okay.
I regret very much having used the acronym PPA in the prior. Unfortunately, the transactional attorneys that worked on the transaction are not purchase power guys, and so they use that acronym, not recognizing that from a. In another context, it was very confusing.
Well, Mr. Kirkova, before you get overly apologetic to the attorneys, I mean, it's not like we can't read, too. So we do carry a little burden for our own ignorance, too.
Very good. Nevertheless, there were a couple of particular issues you folks raised in your discussions that we really sort of took to heart. One was the discussion of did our settlement agreement create some sort of a perverse incentive to sign it up prematurely only to lock in an ADP.
Yeah.
Well, number one, I don't think it did, but nevertheless, to try to help as a showing of, we think, good faith that, no, that's not what this is about at all. We're willing to say we'll wait 30 days or when we start actually turning dirt.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, if the concern is that we've somehow gamed the system to prematurely, sign this thing. Well, once we start turning dirt, I think that's yet another step down the road. Or if it waits 30 days, it seems to me anyway that helps address this concern about a perverse incentive.
I have questions, I guess.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I'm out there now.
Sure, please.
Yeah. So, okay. So once the ownership agreement is signed, 30 days from there, then it's deemed that it'd be considered a prudent project. So how is that not an incentive to sign early? Even you got to wait 30 more days, but how would that not be an incentive just to get to an ownership agreement right away? I hear what you're saying, but convince me.
I'd like that opportunity, Commissioner. Thank you. if I might, I'd like to actually address your question, but do so in the context of the actual facts on the ground, mm-hmm. which is Fargo Phase 1, mm-hmm. because that's the one that has now occurred. And I'd like to use that and describe how that has played out in hopefully an effort to help you guys understand that, the transaction moved forward, the ADP will move forward on its own, The incentives are not linked. On August 16th, the management committee of the five utilities in the Fargo Phase 1 project got together and had a vote. And I start with the management committee vote because that actually hits exactly one of the concerns you folks have had, that's the place where this concept of critical permits gets crystallized. So the management committee said, what are the critical permits and have they been issued? And in the case of Fargo Phase 1, it was because it's a segment solely in Minnesota, it was the Minnesota Certificate of Need and the Minnesota Route Permit, which then also includes the route permit includes environmental stuff. Also, the management committee had to decide, has all of the ground level development work been completed sufficient to commence construction? And the management committee had to decide, were the documents, the transaction documents, fully negotiated and ready to be signed? That occurred on August 16th. On August 18th, the documents were actually signed by the utilities. And by the way, that's that stack right there. That's what got signed on August 18th. It's not an insubstantial effort. These are major commercial transactions.
But would you agree that once those documents are signed, you still could back out of it without the project continuing?
Theoretically, yes, sir. But what happened on August 18th as well, or perhaps it was the 19th, is that the contracts call for each of the five participating utilities to put into a common trust account, and it is a trust account, their first progress payment toward actual construction. That happened. All five utilities put in the required amount, and now they have monthly progress payment obligations. And the project manager, in this case, XL Energy is the project manager, then is authorized to commence construction. And I'm told that before Labor Day, so within a couple of weeks after the money going into the bank, they broke ground and they started grading the substation site down in the Monticello area or whichever one it was. And so the transaction sort of came together, the documents were signed, the money was transferred, and the construction began in very close succession. I think that sequence of events suggests that there's not an interest in prematurely signing these documents, you know, signing them and leaving them sit on a shelf for a year or something like that. I think to the contrary, I think the way the schedules are lining up for all the projects, they're all going to look more or less like this, that parties will negotiate the final terms and conditions, they'll get the final permits that they need, the management committee will hold a vote, and when the owners decide, yes, we're ready to go, then the documents, and there'll be a set of documents that'll look very similar to those for each of the different projects, sign them up, put the money in the bank, and break ground. That's really the intended sequence. A couple of other points, if I might,
if I can just ask, please, real quick, because it's I think germane to Commissioner Kalk's question. Let me ask it this way: why have the language related to the ADP kicking in 30 days after the ownership agreement is signed, if it inevitably leads to turning dirt within a very short period of time? Why not just have the ADP contingent on the kicking in after construction commences? What's the rationale for having kind of the either or?
Commissioner Clark, I suspect we'd have to talk about it a little bit, but I suspect we could do it that other way. Part of what we were trying to address was the concern we heard coming from you folks of the, you know, the concern over the timing. And we thought, well, if there's a grace period, you know, if it's turning dirt that's the concern, or a grace period, we I guess concluded that was a better way to suggest it. And I don't want to overstate the sameness of the projects. I think there is certainly a possibility that, you know, that a a lacrosse project would take, or the Bemidji project. Now, Bemidji will work very quickly because they're also on critical path construction. But take a lacrosse project where the proposed in-service date is 2015. I don't know this, but I could potentially see the potential that you'd sign up the ownership agreements in order to then do major procurement, but actual turning of dirt might wait a few weeks or months. And so I do think there's a legitimate desire for a little flexibility there. So I guess I hope that answered your question.
Okay, I think so. But explain again how the 30-day after ownership agreement signed attempts to address the commission concern about timing. I assume that's the issue of perverse incentives. Yep. And that whole, link those again one more time.
Sure. To our way of thinking all along, we viewed it as the signing of the ownership agreement being the key triggering event that binds the utilities to perform. Mm-hmm. And so to us, that's always been sort of the key thing. We've understood that with the concern that, well, does that create an incentive, a perverse incentive, to sign it up prematurely, or frankly, sign it up for bad motives?
Well, that's the bigger
question. We thought, well, okay, we could offer up a grace period, which is pretty inconsistent with the notion of signing it up for bad motives or signing it up, you know, prematurely.
See, I don't know if I buy that argument, because whether it's the bad motive and you wait 30 days, it's still a bad motive. But I get your point.
But I'd actually like to, if I could, to sort of expand on that.
You sold me. I just. I like the. Once you turn some dirt, to me, that project not continuing is pretty unlikely. When you read that, all whatever agreement, 30 days, 60 days, that's still that gray period in my mind.
Mitch, go ahead.
Mitch Armstrong, just a quick question for clarification purposes. Mr. Krikova, how this works in practice, when these ownership agreements are signed, is that how long till the advance money gets deposited?
Mr. Chair, Mike Krikova, it is my understanding that in the case of the Fargo situation, the money transferred the next day, and perhaps the same day. I'm not up exactly on that, but it definitely transferred right away after the documents were signed.
Do you know more particular?
Yeah, it was with Tim Rogelstad from Otter Tail. It was within 2 days of the actual execution of the agreement.
And every participant, Mitch Armstrong again, and every participant had to put in their proportionate share of the first advance?
That is correct. I'm hesitant to say more, because if I've sold Commissioner Kalk, I probably don't want to talk him out of it. But
I'm sold on your argument. I don't know that I agree with it, but right. I get your point.
But let me address sort of the other part of the concern of a perverse incentive, because I think this is, you know,
It's kind of a critical deal, yeah.
Maybe I'm swimming upstream, Commissioner, but I'm going to try.
Yeah. I appreciate it, but it comes down to, even though people commit money, it's still, if you back out of it, that money gets billed back to the ratepayers, even though you already committed the money.
Except think about it this way. And I, to be real candid with you, I think you're missing one pretty important piece of that puzzle, and that is this. This transaction is not just Otter Tail and Xcel. It includes, and if we want to speak specifically to Fargo Phase 1, it includes three other entities over whom you have no jurisdiction. We have Minnesota Power, who's an IOU in Minnesota. They don't care about your ADP law. They don't care whether these guys get recovery. You have a co-op. you know, and they own facilities in North Dakota, but they're not worried about whether these two IOUs, you know, get recovery under your statute, and you have a muni, and they don't care either. And so what the, in order for the walkaway scenario to happen, and again, I'm not ever going to overstate it and say that could never possibly happen. Yes, you have correctly identified a theoretical risk that could happen, and that's just the facts. But in order for it to happen, it would require such an extraordinary set of circumstances. You would essentially have to get three other, you'd have to rely on three other disinterested parties to go along with a termination scenario where their incentives are totally different than Otter Tail's.
Let's not forget that this, we're talking about an advanced prudence determination, that even if we didn't get the advanced prudence determination, the same scenario could carry out and they could still come back and recover. They'd still probably, in all likelihood, get the recovery.
Well, and I think, Chair Kramer, I think that's worth commenting on, if I may. Yeah. Sometimes I think we on our side, and certainly I personally,
we're all together serving the people. There's no sides.
But okay, fair enough. I'll just speak for me. Mm-hmm. I am very much prone to losing the forest for the trees sometimes, mm-hmm. and I think that in this very, very healthy discussion that we've been having now since April, over this issue and trying to figure out a way to implement your statute while doing it in a way that is most comfortable for all the stakeholders, I think it's been a great discussion. I think it's we've made a lot of progress here. But at the same time, I think your comment prompts me to say, the fundamental here is really something very different. Mm-hmm. The fundamental is the utilities in the Midwestern region came up with four really important transmission projects, mm-hmm. that MISO has endorsed in one fashion or another, and I grant you that there's the occasional nuance, but MISO has endorsed these projects. 11 regional utilities have endorsed these projects. The Minnesota regulatory process has proceeded. There's now been filings at FERC on portions of this that have gone through. These are, I think, by all consensus, good projects. And ultimately, your ADP law, in our view, is really just another statement or another way of stating, we think these are good projects. We think they should go forward. We think there's value to be had to encourage the utilities to make these investments. And yes, the law then says that once I make that determination, there's a cost recovery component to it. But really, much more fundamentally, we hope that in the end, the new settlement agreement gets everybody comfortable that, yes, these are good projects, and, yes, it's a good idea for these utilities to go forward on them.
Hey, Mike, Keith Bell, if I might interrupt here, Mr. Chairman.
Please, Keith, yeah.
You raised the Midwest ISO process, and in regards to this particular concern about the perverse incentives and whatnot, I don't want the commission to take lightly our review process. Under the transmission owners agreement, when we have transmission owners like XL and Otter Tail and MDU, Northern States and whatnot, come in with a plan and it goes through our process, they are committing as well to building that. When it goes through that review process, there is a commitment under the transmission owners agreement to move forward with that, or tell us if a project has been reviewed and approved under the MTEP process, to tell us they're not going to build it. So there's that additional comfort that I hope the commission can take in knowing that it has been reviewed and vetted and approved, and then we've got entities committing to go forward with that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because the alternative is they have to tell us, no, we're not going to build this once we've approved a project, so that we can go to others and make sure that project will get built.
Thanks for those comments. And believe me, this is Tony Clark. The Midwest ISO, if anything, may be the most critical piece of information in the docket, because it's an independent expert review of this. And to me, it is one of the great values of having an independent RTO, is that you do have that outside look. And barring that, we would not have that. So thank you.
You know, along the same lines of the same discussion, just as sure as even without an advanced determination of prudence, there would perhaps in an abandoned project still be, no doubt would be an opportunity at least to come back for recovery. Then the next question to me then is, what's the value of the advanced determination of prudence? And no one's ever really been able to quantify what that is exactly. We all know, basically, theoretically, why it ought to make sense. How important is the ADP in light of, all of the other things that come into play, including the MISO, review? Is that a fair question, or is there a fair answer?
Mr. Chair, it's a very fair question, and I'll do my best. And I think it's an answer that has multiple parts. No one of those parts by itself is sort of critical. Mm-hmm. But in the end, taken together, I think it is important that the advance determination becomes sort of, this is an important criteria. Number one, I believe the advanced determination of prudence statute is one of a number of mechanisms that exist around the country that is designed to create the incentive for utilities to build infrastructure. Now, I speak no ill of the two utilities that I'm here to represent, because I don't, in my experience with them, don't actually think they've been guilty of it. But certainly nationwide, there's a lot of examples you can come up with of utilities who became construction shy because they were scared of the downstream cost recovery. They were scared of having to take haircuts, and if they had to defer it to a rate case, that they were scared of it. Mm-hmm. Again, I don't think that's the representative of the facts in front of you today, but nevertheless, I think that's why your statute, at least in part, got passed. Number two, I think the existence of the statute itself creates a desire and an incentive for ruling on the advance piece of it. And I think Ms. Patel, when she was testifying last spring, tried to speak to that specific issue on the notion of these utilities have to go get the money to build these things.
Right.
This is not, there's not the money, all the money is not just sitting around waiting to be, deployed. They got to go either do stock issuances or do debt financings, and I'm not involved in any of that, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. But I gather that what people on Wall Street think about this transaction matters. Sure. Now, can I quantify how it matters? No. Is it worth 50 basis points? Is it worth 10 basis points? I don't know. But I tell you what, I've talked to the finance people behind Mr. Alders and Mr. Rogelstad enough to be personally convinced that if you have a statute that says give an advance determination of prudence and you don't give one, people in New York are going to notice. And is it going to be fatal? I doubt it. Mm-hmm. But is it going to matter at some level? Yeah, I think it is. And so, in the end, and then number three, and I think most importantly, and I would like to draw back to that fundamental again, mm-hmm. is these utilities would like you to give them an indication that, these are good projects. We've looked at the record. We've looked at the data that you supplied, and these are good projects. And, we want you to proceed with these. And the mechanism we have here in North Dakota for giving that thumbs up, go forth and do good, utilities, the mechanism you got, with all faults, and believe me, Commissioner Clark, I've heard you loud and clear on your thoughts about that statute, and fair points, by the way, very fair points. Nevertheless, sitting here today, that's the path you got, and, mm-hmm. and so we believe it's important for you to give us that thumbs up so that as we go forward, we know that we've tried really hard to be transparent and to be pretty direct with you today and in April. Likewise, we'd like you to be direct with us and say, yeah, go for it. Go build these things and do it prudently.
Yeah, well, and to be fair, I don't fault the applicants for bringing the case, because the question that you will be asked on Wall Street when you attempt to raise capital is, you have this statute on the books. Why did you not attempt to use it? Why didn't you, you know, give the commission that opportunity to rule on it? And so there it is. I mean, it's almost one that if it's on the books, it has to be used, or else there's actually a negative consequence to the utilities if they don't. All of that doesn't clear up my philosophical problem with the fact that I think companies have boards of directors for a reason, and that statutes like this put regulatory commissions far too close to actually running utility companies as opposed to overseeing the decisions that they make. But
there's a point that Mitch pointed out, that a lot of our statutes, correct me if I'm wrong here, say we shall do things. This statute says we may do it. So even in the statute, when it was designed, it gave us that flexibility that, you know what, we may do this, but we don't necessarily have to. And that's different than most of the statutes that the PSC works with. So, I mean, to get this passed, it wasn't like it was a slam dunk by all. There was definitely a lot of give and take to give us some flexibility in this. But anyway, I think this is, we could probably discuss for hours. I did have a question that I wanted to raise about the need for power, because one of the things that came out in Big Stone is there was a lot of testimony about all these things we needed. And when the whole thing unraveled, it came back that, well, maybe what we said we needed isn't what we needed when it came time for construction. Right now, everything I see says there's 25% or more power in the MISO grid than the country needs. But to my understanding, Xcel and Otter Tail are meeting all their power needs. So I understand the reliability piece, but why do you need this for more power? I mean, how would you answer that question? Because I believe I answered it in the hearing, or asked that question in the hearing and got an answer. But I think the situation's changed since then.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Kalk, I'm not sure that I would agree that the situation has changed since then, but nevertheless, I think that we've taken the view that these three transmission lines are, or four transmission lines rather, are valuable for the system for multiple purposes. Mm. Regional reliability, I don't think anybody disputes that, and I think MISO, Mr. Bell's commentary about the MISO analysis is apropos. Aside from regional reliability, it's not an issue of more power, it's an issue of better delivery within certain load pockets on the system, one of which being Fargo in the greater Red River Valley area. I haven't heard any suggestion, and I've not seen any data that suggests that the need to build the need to improve transfer capability in the greater Red River Valley has gone away. Now, is it possible that that reduced load might suggest that, well, okay, maybe Fargo needs additional load serving, but maybe you could defer it a year. That could be. Yeah, that certainly could be, Commissioner Kalk. But I don't think anybody has suggested that you know the need has gone away. And I'll give you an example. In our original filings for the Bemidji project, which again I think everybody recognizes the needs in that circumstance, Bemidji helps the northern part of the Red River Valley, so Grand Forks and that area. The original proposed in-service date for the Bemidji project was 2011, and we're now shooting for 2012. Did the change in the economy impact on that decision? I think it probably did. Did it suggest to anybody that the Bemidji project was no longer needed at all? Absolutely not. A year delay maybe, but not gone away. And so I don't think that, from our perspective anyway, the changed economy has not lessened, in our view, the need for these facilities. And actually, just before you came in this morning, we were having a sidebar, and I'll leave Mr. Alders or Rogelstad, if they know more details about this, that in August of the middle week of August this year, NSP had a system peak, an actual system peak, uncontrolled system peak, which surprised me quite a bit when it occurred because, you know, with the economy being down and load being down, all of a sudden, you know, in terms of that really, really hot week in the middle of August, and they reached a system peak. So I don't know that I just think there's a lot of factors here, and that at least as it pertains to transmission, we still need these lines and more or less continue to need them on the schedule we've been talking about, recognizing that there may be a year here, a year there, that things could slip.
Can we ask Mr. Bell to chime in at this point and just see if from a MISO perspective, has the slackening in demand changed any of the basis for its recommendation in the hearing?
Yeah. Boy, you're going to ask a lawyer to do an engineer's work here.
It's a key question. Or if there's a report that you're aware of that's come out, or, I mean, anything like that.
No. To my knowledge, we have not seen anything. You know, the issue does come up quite a bit as far as the economic downturn, but as you know, Commissioner Clark, we're constantly studying the regional system, and nothing, to my knowledge, has come up in any of those ongoing analyses that indicate these particular projects are no longer needed or could be delayed. As a matter of fact, there's probably additional projects in that area that given the planning horizon we look at, may be necessary in the coming years.
Or put another way, knowing what you know today, would MISO's testimony be the same as it was back in April?
I don't see any reason why it would change at all.
So if this is Brian here, if I could, I guess the planning horizons of MISO, you're telling me that even though perhaps we have 25 extra percent, and that percent I'm sure changes in the grid right now, that your projections down the road say you're going to need that, whether it be 2 years, 3 years, 5 years.
Well, and if I might add on to that question, I mean, that 25 or 27% margin reserves includes what's required for reliability, I presume.
Some of that.
Tim wants to chime in.
Yeah. Tim Rogelstad from Otter Tail. I'll try and maybe describe a little bit what I see as kind of somewhat, you know, the comment about the 25% reserve margin or availability of energy or demand, that's across the entire MISO footprint. So from the Dakotas all the way to Ohio, you know, they're looking at that all in aggregate. It doesn't necessarily give an indication of what right here in North Dakota, here's what that margin is. And I'd view that as kind of the generation reliability. Then you got to look, and especially I think in the case, again, and specifically the Fargo project and the Bemidji project, you know, there isn't a lot of generation in the Red River Valley. There's getting to be more renewable energy, non-dispatchable, that makes it more difficult, but we rely on the transmission system to bring in the power from the remote generation resources for the most part. And so you can't lose sight of the fact that the local needs may be different than this overall aggregate, you know, generation perspective. And, you know, some of the things that we've seen, you know, recently, you know, like this summer, I know we were in front of the Cass County Commission regarding the Fargo project and questions about the economy and so forth. And I think the day we were there, they had Fargo was number one in home building starts in the United States, or something to that effect. There's, you know, the downturn is affecting different areas differently, and we still see that there hasn't been the tail off that, you know, the rest of the country has seen. Now, not to say that it hasn't, there's been a dip. There certainly has. But, again, we're dependent on kind of from a more of a local reliability transmission perspective. These needs haven't changed all that much. Again, I think the comment about the Bemidji project slipping a year in service, you know, it gave us some more time, but we had to spend a lot of time explaining how we were going to continue to serve the load reliably. In fact, we even have systems in place that if certain events happen, we'd actually shed load automatically to prevent more of a wider spread blackout. Those things on those two particular projects haven't changed. And I think similarly on that La Crosse project, that Rochester, Minnesota area, the La Crosse, Wisconsin area, two similar sorts of reliability issues that aren't related to the kind of the generation, the overall, what's the availability of generation in the entire pool. And so I think you kind of got to look at it a little bit different perspective.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Tim. This is Keith Bell for saving me from trying to engineering principles. But it is the transfer capability that.
Well, and I appreciate, too, that the geography is different even within a footprint. MISO is still pretty big. And we're blessed to be in one of the higher growth areas of a recession. So, Mitch, anything else? I mean, I know we have this stipulation that you all looked at that we haven't seen yet, but is there anything else we should be?
I do have a couple questions directed towards the applicants. And how many ownership agreements are we expecting with these four projects?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Armstrong, right now, I mean, we would like to not be totally tied down on this, but right now the anticipation is that there will be two for Fargo. Fargo Phase 1 is completed. Fargo Phase 2 will be the remainder of the Fargo project. Bemidji will be a single set of documents. So far as I know, both Brookings and La Crosse are intended to be proceeded as single projects. However, I at least in my simpleton's brain look at the La Crosse project and sort of see a natural dividing point at the river that might suggest, and again, I'm not saying that, and I've not participated in any conversations on that. I don't want to unduly tie the hands of the transactional lawyers who are working on this. So I'm thinking five or thereabouts.
And Mr. Krikova, my purpose of my question is obviously if the commission, you know, accepts this settlement agreement, kind of the administration and you know, overseeing this, given the statute allows us a chance to come back and look at it later, would the companies be willing to confirm in writing when ownership agreements are executed for each phase?
Yes, certainly. We intend to do that. I think that's contemplated in the settlement agreement. So
they also be willing to confirm in writing when in construction starts?
Yes, indeed, we would do that as well.
This is a very sensitive microphone.
And with the critical permits, is there a reason the FERC permits aren't, or the FERC application is not included?
I'm glad you asked that. There is, as a matter of fact, a reason, and I think it sort of helps us tell the story of how we got here and how this whole critical permit concept has become so confusing. Our fundamental from the utility side is we aren't going to start construction until we have legal authority to start construction. Things like CPCNs, route permits, required if federal environmental review is required. Things of that nature, that's the sort of, and so our folks have said, well, we aren't signing, you know, we just aren't going to sign the ownership documents until we have those pieces in place. It's sort of kind of rough logic, yeah. The FERC issue, which I'm not directly all that involved in, is sort of close to that, but sort of not, and it's more of a rate making issue that they're clarifying with FERC. It's a really important issue, and so some people have kind of took the view of, I don't know that I want to sign my ownership document until I know that the FERC issue is going to get resolved. Does that mean that there's not really a permit to be issued? And as happened in the Fargo Phase 1 scenario, they made the application for the FERC permit, the TCEA Transmission Capacity Exchange Agreement. As I understand it, it is proceeding through the FERC process, uncontested, very sort of, you know, moving through no problem. And the parties in that instance said, you know what, this one is really important, and we're confident we're going to get it, so we don't want to hold up proceeding with construction, waiting for the actual, you know, docket listing to show that it's finally gotten through their process. So I don't know if that, and when we were talking about this internally, we concluded from our side that it might potentially tie our hands more than we really would want to move forward expeditiously. It's the opposite of the perverse incentive. We don't want there to be something out there that's not truly critical or that we're confident we're going to get, and so fine, we'll sign the agreements and move forward without it. We didn't want to tie our hands. Okay.
Mr. Krikova, maybe Mitch Armstrong, maybe you or one of the applicants could explain to us a little more what the TCEA agreement is about.
Tim Rogelstad from Ottertail. It goes back to kind of the original ownership structure. And what's unique about these projects is that we've gone from a path of historically having discrete ownership of facilities, so that it, you know, if it's a 100-mile line, Ottertail might own 20 miles, Xcel might own 70 miles, and GRE maybe 10 miles, to a notion of we're going to have undivided ownership. And so that means that we have an ownership percentage in the project, as opposed to owning of the entire line, as opposed to we own the 10 miles from the Fargo substation, you know, into Minnesota. And so in order to make that work, you know, that's somewhat of a unique arrangement. And also, to complicate things, the substations are actually going to be owned discreetly, more like historically. And the reason we did that is because of the NERC compliance complexities, with all the requirements of complying with the NERC reliability standards, the testing that needs to take place at substations. It was determined to be too complicated to just try and say, Ottertail, you've got 10% of this substation, Xcel, 30%, et cetera. And so we've got a real hybrid of ownership, in the sense we've got non-discrete lines and discrete substations. But the overall business deal is each party has the rights from a transmission perspective across all facilities equally in proportion to our overall investment in the project. So even though we won't own the quarry substation near St. Cloud for the Fargo project, Ottertail will have rights through this transmission capacity and exchange agreement, the TCEA. And so that's kind of the purpose, is to try and tie the ownership arrangement with the granting of rights on the facilities. I'd clarify that in the sense, too, that, you know, MISO still controls the access to the transmission system, but it's what MISO can sell of whose party. So I don't want to make sure that I don't want to create some confusion there. The other thing, you know, I think just to kind of elaborate kind of on the sequence of events that led up to the signing of the Fargo Phase 1 agreements, and again, what we had done is we'd gone out and met with FERC staff in a pre-filing meeting explaining kind of the ownership arrangement, and actually we had done that several years ago before we started down the path of actually developing these, to kind of make sure that there wasn't a fatal flaw, at least, you know, getting their feedback. And so we had gone out, shared with them, and granted, we did not have an order or anything in hand, but they had kind of given us that they thought it was a reasonable approach. And so it wasn't like we went into it blind, not knowing that, you know, that there was going to be a lot of risk with signing these agreements without having the FERC order on the TCEA. And so that was kind of part of the rationale as well. And as you get down to the point where you're trying to close the project, I mean, there's a lot of things in play. And you know, we focused a lot on the critical permits, but it's also making sure that each company has its financing in place. And those are also factors that play into it. But as you get down, you're trying to match, do we have enough certainty so that we are confident we can go forward?
This is a question for Mr. Kirkova, Mitch Armstrong, or the applicants, I guess. And then kind of along the lines of my previous question, if something happens with these projects where it just looks like they may not go forward, would the applicants be agreeable to, you know, promptly informing the commission of those circumstances?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Armstrong, this is Mike Kirkova. Yes, of course we will.
How would we define promptly? In your mind, Mitch, is that a week, a month, 2 months?
I would say within 5 working days of knowledge, probably, okay, something to that effect.
And if I could, I guess I have to ask a clarification or the SEC lawyers get upset.
Yeah.
I think we do have to take into account that if something catastrophic happened, you know, and frankly, the scenario that Mr. Armstrong's speaking to and the scenarios you folks have spoke to before, from our perspective, you're talking about catastrophes. And so if that happens, these utilities would have to file 8Ks and they'd have to comply with all those SEC requirements. And I'm not sure what I think the word promptly means either, but I can promise you that we will promptly inform you promptly after we have legal authority to inform you. We're not going to violate the securities laws and give you insider information, but when we
wouldn't want.
Right, which you wouldn't want.
You know, it is a bit of a challenge for us, though, because catastrophes are easy to sort of define and deal with. The things that are more difficult to deal with are the things that I think the ADP has the, again, built-in perverse incentive, if you will, to where certain signs or red flags become sort of orange because we have this ADP, and maybe we give it a few more days, or let's try one more thing, and before long, it's 8 working days instead of 5 working days, and perhaps a catastrophe could have been avoided, and that may be something more about what Mitch is getting to.
And Mike, Mitch Armstrong, my question, I wasn't necessarily thinking of a catastrophe situation. Just the ownership agreement has, and I agree with you, it's a very sophisticated and very strict contract, but it has certain procedures where a level C vote or such could come into place, and what I'm thinking of is somewhere along the line there's a level C vote to terminate the project that we would, the commission would be notified at that time within 5 days of such.
Subject to check, I believe that if a level C vote of the management committee has occurred, that would be a publicly available event, and so I don't think we'd have any problem, you know, immediately, promptly, as quickly as we can get on the phone letting you know that that vote has occurred, and I'm almost certain that that wouldn't create any insider or SEC sorts of issues. So if you want, if 5 days works for you folks,
You don't have a problem with that, right?
Yeah, I think 5 days works fine. And if I may ask a question of Mr. Cedarquist, do we routinely provide things like 10Ks and 8Ks to the North Dakota Commission staff or the commission when they get filed?
Not routinely.
Not routinely? Okay. Another thing that I might then suggest as an alternative, because again, I fully see this in the context of the kinds of scenarios we're talking about would be 8K worthy events. That if we issued an 8K, if either of these two utilities issued an 8K, advising of a cancellation of one of these projects, we would certainly be willing to file that. Again, if 5 days works for you, 5 days works for us.
I don't have any further questions.
Anybody, commissioners?
No.
I think we have everything we need.
Well, just throw it. If Jim, we haven't heard anything from your viewpoint. Do you have anything you'd like to add? Because I trust your advice, and we got a lot of things to talk about. We've heard a lot from Otter Tail, but I'm just curious if you had anything you wanted to throw our way.
Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Chair, Commissioner Clark, thank you very much. No, don't really have too much to add. I would just amplify the idea that, indeed, the ADP statute and process is the mechanism available to us to work cooperatively with our regulators so that when we're making multi-billion-dollar investments in infrastructure, we are reasonably assured that, indeed, the region thinks it's the right thing to do.
Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Jim. Anybody else? You know, with that thought in mind, Jim and Tim probably and Dave and Mark as much as anything, as we outside again the specific scope of this specific proceeding, as we think about the ADP and knowing some of the concerns that you've heard from here and knowing that some of the partners are working on legislation and whatnot, it might be worth considering some of these Wall Street examples that are sort of hypothetical at this point, trying to find some quantifying evidence or at least experts, you know, as we go forward to sort of, it's a good time to take a retrospective look now at the law and how it's worked, whether it's worked, where it hasn't worked well, and whether there's what kind of changes somewhere between a tweak to repeal would be appropriate. I just throw it out because I know there are a lot of people working on it right now. You know, we've offered our own, at least simple amendments, if you will, but I know there are more complex things being done as well. So I just throw it out for our consideration as we go forward. Anybody else that's, Mr. Bell, anything else you wanted to say before the record closes?
Nothing from the Midwest ISO, but thanks for the opportunity.
You bet. Alana, Mitch is trying to get your attention. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, yeah. You had made the comment that that the commissioners had not yet seen the new settlement agreement. And if we may, we'll pass that out.
Be the time. Thank you. Thank you.
Maybe take a break too, then?
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. Why don't we do that? Why don't we take a 10-minute recess
sure.
So you people can. And we can even take a minute to read it. We'll leave the internet live just for everybody's benefit, and we'll leave the phone line open so we don't lose Mr. Bell, and then we'll. If you can turn the recorder off, I suppose, if you want. And then come back and turn it back on. But just push pause so that we don't have to restate all the. So it's all part of the same tape, right? You paused it again? Okay. All right. Yeah, we're back in order for the informal. And after a brief recess, we've all now been handed the new settlement agreement. And who wants to present it, I guess? Mr. Kirkbaugh, I guess it makes sense that you would present it. And present it to the degree you describe the differences, I guess, that they slightly.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Commissioners. What you have in front of you is the new and I think we believe improved settlement agreement. It updates a few things, the date of the agreement, things of that nature. It clarifies, this was a question that Mr. Armstrong, a very helpful question that Mr. Armstrong had, clarifying that, you know, if a portion of a project like Fargo Phase 1 is signed up, that the ADP then only applies to that portion and it doesn't somehow bleed into the rest of the Fargo. We thought that was a helpful clarification. It rewrites, sort of from the ground up, paragraph 1. In the first part of paragraph 2, really, are changed really substantially, and I don't think the intent of paragraph 1 and 2 change, with the exception of the change we discussed before of the trigger being start of construction or 30 days, The rest of the changes in paragraphs 1 and 2 are really conforming changes and clarifications and trying to simplify the language. Then through the remainder of the document, there are, again, consistent clarification changes, nothing really new in the that would be called new in the remainder of the document. I don't know if we passed out red lines. We do have those available. We've given them to your staff so that we can...
we just need to have those copies for our work session.
They would be happy for help for a work session.
And then Mr. Simpson just pointed out to me the one other thing that is worthy of mention is we did attach a new Schedule 1, which is the list of critical permits that we see today being the ones that we expect will have to be gotten in the future.
Did we haven't talked about Brookings at all today, but did you want to talk about that at all? I'm sure you've heard the commission's discussion with regard to the Brookings project and whether there's any need for us to have concern about the fact that it's still has not been received final designation by MISO.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Clark, certainly we're happy to visit about Brookings. We think that the way we had captured the Brookings project in the original settlement, and again, there's some refinements here, but doesn't really change the structure of what we proposed, is that it gives the commission the flexibility you were looking for in that period of time while the MISO situation gets finally resolved. We do believe, you know, and I think by way of an update, since early May when we were here last, I think it's fair to characterize that the MISO situation has taken at least a couple of pretty big steps, and I won't characterize forward or backward. It sort of depends on your point of view, but they've certainly taken a couple of very, you know, and from the utility's perspective, very good positive steps. The July 15th filing of the REC B3 tariff structure is certainly something that these utilities are on board with. I won't certainly can't say there's a consensus out there, but I think some pretty important stakeholders have recognized that's a structure that seems to work. MISO is, and Keith, I'm going to ask you to jump in here at some point and maybe give your perspective, but, the MISO process is moving its way through FERC. I understand that interveners submitted comments a week or so ago. There were lots of them all over the map, you know, some supportive, some not supportive on one or more of probably several hundred issues. It's a pretty big docket. Nevertheless, I think our view is that the level of certainty at the MISO level process is increasing rather than decreasing. And and by way of again further positive development from our perspective, and I think creating certainty is that MISO, I'm told, Zev is just showing me a. Okay, and Exhibit J in the MISO filing has the Brookings line as number 2 on its list of starter projects for the MVP designation, which is sort of that's the piece of certainty that we've been looking for. So assuming FERC sees it MISO's way, you know, we see the Brookings situation as resolving itself, and it probably won't happen until next year sometime, but we're feeling much better about things.
Can I add, because here's a scenario with regard, and we'll use that as the example. I mean, an action like this ADP, as a small part of the overall thing as it is, do you see this as having a potentially favorable impact on, say, the Brookings situation from your perspective? Again, realizing not everybody's on the same page. I mean, I get back to sort of that overall, that higher level certainty issue that can create some momentum perhaps for everything, or is that too optimistic?
I don't think it's too optimistic, but I don't also want to oversell, sure, you know, it either. I'd say this: every positive regulatory step these utilities take and every positive regulatory reaction they get from this commission, other commissions, FERC, MISO, other stakeholders in the community, does indeed help build momentum toward the successful deployment of these projects.
Well,
and this is certainly one of them, and this is a very important one. I mean, as Mr. Alder said before the break, you know, these utilities take very seriously their responsibilities to you and the ratepayers of this state, and we want to make sure that you're comfortable with the projects that we're proceeding with. And so, yeah, that does create some momentum.
Keith, are you still on the line?
Yes, I sure am.
Okay. Did you want to chime in on anything that you've heard to this point?
I think it would be at this point duplicative of what Mike said.
Okay.
I certainly can attest to the fact that we did get a lot of different perspectives on our July 15th.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
And we are working our way through that and working on a response to some of that. I'm encouraged by the utilities, their support for the filing, and I'm glad that Mr. Krikova did mention the starter project list that did show Brookings as being one of those projects. But certainly, I don't want to prejudge our stakeholder process where all that's going to be vetted, which actually, as a matter of fact, is underway today. We have a stakeholder process. We're not dragging our feet on this. Obviously, we've got to wait to see what FERC is going to do with that filing. But we have already started the stakeholder processes that are going to be addressing these starter projects and others. And as I alluded to a moment ago, we've got one going on downstairs right now.
Good. Thank you. Mitch, anything? You've had the agreement for at least some hours, if not days.
I did have a chance to, go over the agreement with council yesterday and just not necessarily address the terms of it so much as any potential ambiguities that I saw reading it from a commission perspective. And I believe they've incorporated my language in here to try to make it a more clear agreement from our perspective. Not necessarily substantively, but mm-hmm. being consistent throughout.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Great. You guys any questions, Brian or Tony?
No questions. We should probably schedule a work session.
I think that's next.
And I mean, the work session
doesn't have to be there, although perhaps it could be. I don't know.
Commissioners, too, also I was in receipt of a copy of the ownership agreement for the Monticello to St. Cloud line. And I think we need to clarify the record for those. And I did have a chance to review the terms and our concerns or the concerns expressed by me in our previous work sessions about the actual level of impracticability of, ending this project after this ownership agreement is signed. And I believe we need to, clarify the record by entering the settlement exhibits and additional exhibits the applicant may have.
Sure. And you know, I guess we already up front agreed or stipulated that anything that's said would be part of the record, but perhaps not the documents themselves. Is that what I'm hearing, Alana?
I think the parties all intended that it was documents and what's said.
Okay,
that's correct.
I had suggested we not give them exhibit numbers because we don't have a real record, but we will give them docket numbers.
That's fine.
Okay with everybody.
That would be consistent with what we've done with other informals. It's just inconsistent. You know, this is a half and half
right.
record now, but nonetheless, at least we know. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
And yeah. Mr. Chairman, on a procedural note, this is Keith Bell.
Yes.
You may have noticed that the Midwest ISO is not shown as a signatory to that, but just for the sake of the record, we have absolutely no objections to that being taken under consideration by the commission.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah. Well,
Mr. Simpson.
This is Zev Simpson. We'll just need to offer these project agreements into evidence. That's all.
All right. Mm-hmm. They'll be received as such.
We could do a work session Monday following the Keystone update, potentially.
Yeah, what time is that?
It's like 9 or 10, I can't remember.
Is it 9? Is it 10? If we could do that before lunch, that'd be great.
It works for me.
We don't anticipate Keystone being longer than an hour, do we?
No.
We've got it blocked from 10 to noon.
Oh, okay. So it'd be hard to...
But maybe...
Do they that at 9?
One.
Well, I can't...
11:30.
11:30 would be great. I think a half hour is adequate. Mitch, are you available?
This coming Monday?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Sold.
Monday the 27th at 11:30.
That sounds great. Okay. All right. So we'll have a work session Monday at 11:30. Anything else before we close the record?
Pat, will you coordinate with...
make sure it gets on the Outlook.
With probably Esther to...
Invitation. Sure Esther's probably listening. But yes, because if we walk out of here with, unless you put it on your BlackBerry. All right, if there's nothing else for the record, maybe just some, you don't have any closing comments, that'd be fine, Mike.
Very briefly, Mr.
Sure.
And this is just by way of repeating, thank you very much on behalf of the applicants, on behalf of Zev and myself, and on behalf of all the CapEx utilities who have worked very, very hard to put the projects together and to put the package together for you to try to address your concerns. We really appreciate you making yourselves available today. I personally think this is a very helpful session, and I'm very pleased with how this has gone. And I would just like to reiterate that applicants hereby officially waive any objections to any procedural irregularities under any of the statutes that Alana cited. We are very pleased to have you make your decision based on everything you have heard today and in the record. It's all fair game. Have at it.
Thank you. Anything else, anybody? If not, thank you all as well. And while you've been gracious and all that, Mike, I assure you that much of our confusion doesn't fall on you all. Just so you know, I mean, we did have some circumstances staff-wise and other things that also became difficult for us to deal with. So I appreciate this opportunity as well and in your patience as well. So if there's nothing else, we'll close the hearing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mike, where do you live at?